Welcome to Independent Kiwi Hour. I'm Paul Carruthers, your host, and I'll be talking for the next hour with Vinny Eastwood about current events and what the hell is going on in the world. Welcome, Vinny.
Hey, Paul. Great to be on the broadcast.
How are you?
Somewhat fabulous is my standard response. It's been a hell of an election result, isn't it?
Yeah, not entirely unexpected. But, yeah, tumultuous. I took a step back and watched with great interest the emotional outpouring on Facebook, none of which was unpredictable. People reacted to it more strongly than I thought. In general, among my friends, the reaction would be more measured than it was, and that's not a criticism, mate. It's just an observation that I misunderstood how strongly people felt.
Personally, I was just like, yep, that's kind of how I expected it. Stockholm Syndrome, alive and well.
Yeah, suspension of disbelief and all that kind of stuff. It was like the people who clearly didn't want it to happen are actually still having trouble believing it. And the people who did want it to happen actually possibly partially couldn't believe it to start with as well. Let's just say that I know parties that were thrown in my neighbourhood the night afterwards, and it was absolutely celebration of joy on their part. This is very national. A lot of national support in the area that I live in. Just that in itself showed me that people were holding their breath right up to the last minute. Doesn't matter which side you were on, people weren't entirely sure which way it was going to go. So that tells me that even National Party supporters were probably a little bit in disbelief of the polls. But the celebration in my neighbourhood was absolute relief. You could see it. There was relief on the part of National Party supporters that they got through. There was a lot of chest beating going on and very much a sense of, right, that's it, we're in control. You know, and it was... So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, unfortunately, they are at the moment because David Cunliffe is, oh, God, Benny, what the hell?
I just saw a message from, what are they called, that news organisation that's owned by foreigners that's allegedly New Zealand-owned and it's 150 years old or something?
That's all of them, Benny.
Oh, wait, the New Zealand Herald, that's the one.
I thought you were talking about the whole bloody media.
No, that's thousands of years old, man. You know, it was back in ancient Sumeria time. Anyway, here's the headlines. I've got to read this to you, Paul, because this is so amazing. PM's memo, no arrogance. Labour MPs set sights on Cunliffe. So where does that leave Winston? The fatal gamble that lost internet mana and woman punched shark to escape. To be honest, with the shark one, I'm not 100% sure if that's a political thing or... never mind.
I read a really good book years ago called The Strategy of the Dolphin, and it equated human behaviour to that of sharks and that of dolphins, so it grouped people. But it did it in a really intelligent way, and the best part about the book is they even interviewed personally senior military personnel from all sides all over the world and asked them for their philosophies about life. And they interviewed politicians and everyone you hate, they interviewed them, and they asked them for their philosophies about life. And of course, irrespective of the fact that sometimes and often these people go out and do the exact opposite of what they like to espouse, some of the stuff that came through was phenomenal in the context of new paradigms. And there's a lot of highly intelligent people that are clearly willing to do really stupid things, sadly enough, but it showed you clearly the capacity for humans to behave exactly like sharks or exactly like dolphins. And one of the most important observations that came out of it, I'll say this to all of my friends who are freaking out right now about the National Party, I'll tell you this, mate, dolphins kill sharks hands down every time. When they fight, when in a confrontation, sharks leave dolphins alone for a very good reason, because dolphins can kill sharks very quickly and easily.
Well, you go underneath them and then you park your porpoise in their rectum. You know, it works.
Well, they had blunt noses and they hit hard, right? Now, it's the same as the truth. And that's why when you're campaigning about anything, if you tell the truth, if you stand in the truth, if you live the truth and you don't deviate from it, that includes being honourable and fair and compassionate and all those things, when needed, you are untouchable. You are in a position where they basically have to kill you to stop you, because they'll never take you to court if you stand in the truth. That's what successful campaigning is all about, is maintain your integrity. So anyone who's worried about the outcome, just maintain your integrity, and you will get through this. But you have to maintain your integrity.
Do you think that that actually is absolutely true? I mean, maybe it works in theory, but...
Yes, I do. You have to be unassailable, because you have to be able to defend yourself and your actions at all times. Otherwise, you're wasting your time. That's the whole point of this, because the whole point, the whole gambit, the game these people use, John Key uses it better than anyone I've seen in this country's history. It's bait and switch. You cannot give them ammunition.
But the problem with John Key is that although none of his positions are defensible, he's still unassailable.
I guess what I'm saying is ultimately is that not as rigid as I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting is that I've done things that, and said things that were regrettable, defending Alan Abbott. My biggest regret is that I lost my temper and said things that absolutely could be used against me in future. And I've had to consider my defence at leisure. So in other words, having been said can't be unsaid. And I would just caution people to guard against that because it sets you up for work that is unnecessary possibly in the future. For the simple reason that the way these guys work, they did it all the way through the campaign. Christ, the last week was a perfect example of it. The last week of the election campaign showed me one thing, and that is just how powerful the media is in this country. Those guys do not report the news. They shape it. They're telling you what to think. And they did it better than I've ever seen it done in this country's history. It wasn't until it became unavoidable that the Erebus disaster reporting went against Air New Zealand. And until then, the media went out of its way to help Air New Zealand with it. And it wasn't until it became impossible for them to hide what was going on that they basically did a complete switch. But only since then, it has to be really big things like that, really have I seen anything as big as what happened in the last week. And it was absolute classic bait and switch. Kim.com's biggest mistake was that he gave John Key the opportunity to become the victim in 10 seconds flat. That is the opportunity that John Key seeks and gains sanctuary in every time something like this happens. I learned this the hard way defending Alan Hubbard. It is a tactical error to give them the opportunity to become victims of your anything.
It's true.
You cannot victimise them in any way because the second you do that, you've lost the moral high ground to them. Now, when I say that, you've more often than not lost it to the minds of idiots, so it's not really a loss, but you understand what I'm saying. You create baying crowds against you is the best way to put it. This is the most important thing I learned from defending Alan Hubbard. Gandhi was right, in other words. You have to choose your battles carefully and you have to walk into them and through them with grace. Because if you do not do that, this is how Mandela did it. If you want to win the fight against these guys, that's the route you have to take. It's the only one that will work. It's been proven time and time again by history.
Well, technically Mandela blew stuff up and spent 20 years in Robben Island. And I was talking to a friend of mine from the Free Man Movement. You know, these people who are all about personal sovereignty and things like that, about voting and how they don't want to vote because they don't want to give their consent. My argument is, bro, they don't really need your consent. They only need consent of a very small percentage. And they're like, well, what if everybody didn't vote? And I say, well, what if everybody voted for the legalized cannabis party? You're not going to be able to convince everybody not to vote, just like you're not going to be able to convince everybody to vote for National. It's a moot point. So what they're trying to do instead is just to say, I'm out of the system, I've withdrawn my birth certificate and I've done all this. And they still get pulled over by the cops and tortured and have their houses taken off them and their cars taken off them, and they still get their things repossessed by the banks and all of that kind of jazz. And I go, what did you achieve, bro? You didn't achieve a whole lot. But then another part of me thinks the entire system actually really truly is a fraud. And these people who are going through this and how the system is frauding them, even though they're trying to get out of it, it's kind of like Mandela spending 20 years in Robben Island. Not everybody is willing to make that kind of sacrifice. And I think it was Thomas Paine said something to the effect of the Sunshine Patriots, these people who actually just jump in when the going's good.
I wouldn't rule that kind of future out. One of my greatest concerns at the moment is what's going on in Australia and how close that is to our doorstep, and given the nature of this current government. John Key is very good at pushing perfectly serviceable industries and situations off of the side of the good ship public goodwill and creating the need that they need rescuing. He does this time after time. Done it with Solid Energy, done it with South Canterbury Finance, done it with TV3. It just goes on and on and on. I mean, that IRD debt is what sunk TV3. So where did that come from? What, was he completely unaware of it? I doubt it. It's just questions like that that people are not asking and joining the dots. The man is extraordinarily good at pushing things off the side of a good ship public favour and creating the impression that he's the guy that's going to create the remedy for the problem that he actually caused. And people just fall for it every time. It's like, oh, well, you know, I'll figure it out eventually. But Kim.com, going back to it, made the classic mistake. He just, I like Kim.com. I feel sorry for the guy. I don't care what anybody else thinks, and I don't care what any of my friends think. I'm not into all this fat German shit. Mate, I've studied the case very carefully and very intently. You know what I'm like. fine-tooth comb. I've looked at all the facts and I've balanced it up, thought about it for a long time, and I'm very satisfied that Kim.com is the victim in this situation and that, unfortunately, he's placed himself in the position by being visibly vengeful.
You know what I think he did? He made the classic mistake of thinking that you can actually get justice when you're up against a psychopath who's in control of the justice system.
Well, it's simpler than that, mate. I can say it in one sentence. He basically handed on a plate to John Key the opportunity for John Key to make him the perpetrator and John Key the victim. End of story. And guess what? 48%, clearly, of New Zealand, or thereabouts, went, yep, I know who I'm backing, and it's not that fat German. And that's exactly what happened, mate. And it is that simple. And you know that. And I've said this before about the Kim.com case, because this is the beginning of my show. Bugger it. I'll tell everybody where I stand. I'll tell you how I feel about the Kim.com case, mate. This makes me angry. I'm angry that even $1 of my taxpayer money has been used pursuing this farce. And that goes right up to the Attorney General. I'm sickeningly angry about this. Heads should roll. Right? This is a civil case. If it's about artists' incomes, let's cut to the bottom line. Everybody's going, piracy, piracy, piracy. Okay, what is that? What does that mean? I'll tell you what it means. Artists' incomes. And this is what makes me angry. These studios in Hollywood are not pursuing this because they care about the artists' incomes. They are pursuing this because they care about their bottom lines. Kim.com, I tell you what really frightens me about this country, the whole rhetoric, because half my friends who claim to be caring, compassionate people don't like the guy and they can't even explain why, and they haven't even figured out this is the bloody TPPA in action, you people. Forget it, Hollywood. Forget Warner Brothers. Forget who the hell it is. It doesn't really matter. This is corporate America getting the New Zealand government to regard a civil matter as a criminal matter and use taxpayer money in the process. So in other words, what John Key has done here is he is effectively gambling with the New Zealand justice system on America's behalf to test a case that really as to whether it's a criminal issue or whether it should be regarded as a civil issue. That is effectively what's happening here. How many tens of millions of dollars have been bloody ripped up in this process? And I have to sit there night after night and watch poor bloody Henry go on like this is somehow a good thing. It's treason at the minimum with my bloody taxpayer money. And it makes me angry. That's how I feel about the whole Kim.com thing. And that guy, he's innocent. From my point of view, if all this criminal crap that people go on about, for God's sake, go and study it, the actual cases and what it actually involved, and then weigh it up. We have come across looking like a country of absolute bloody yokels the way we've carried on over this. It's just humiliating. That's how I feel about the Kim.com situation. John Key should be explaining to the New Zealand taxpayer, preferably in a courtroom, why he has spent even one fucking New Zealand dollar on this mind-numbingly stupid wild goose chase. This is the TPPA in action. And this is our future. Now, it doesn't matter what you think of Kim.com, he's just the beginning. That's what everybody should be getting upset about. But half the people I know, more than half the people I know, haven't even joined the dots, didn't it? I feel better now. I'm so sorry about that, but I feel better now.
What's the whole point of having a show, bro?
Yeah. Fuck it.
I told you.
It just makes me angry. I hate misdirected blame. The media is responsible for more misdirected blame than any other bloody phenomenon currently in the world.
Oh, the henchmen, bro. Okay, they're on the take. That's as far as I can concern. Oh, I want to go interview the Prime Minister. Okay, that's great. That'll get you a lot of views, won't it? Yeah, it'll be great. It'll be great. Everybody likes to watch interviews with the Prime Minister. Are you going to ask him any tough questions that'll cause him to hate you and never want to be interviewed by you again? Well, probably not, I'll just report exactly what he says, exactly like he said it, and not fact-check any of it before reporting it to the New Zealand public.
I know. One of the things I watched happen over John Key's last term was that him and all of his public servants became increasingly emboldened by what they got away with. All of their pathways are completely facilitated by the media. It's almost like they've got all these little people running around sort of rolling out red carpet in front of them in terms of the way the headlines go. And TV One News is the best described as the most compliant news service in the world. it's just, it's almost like Libyan. Do you know what I mean? It's just kind of too late to save, really. It's either a complete renewal under different terms, or it's just going to roll on into oblivion, really, isn't it?
Well, unfortunately, they don't have the world's largest remaining fresh water reserve, so nobody's going to bother invading them.
Who?
TVNZ.
No, that's true. That's true, mate.
In fact, I was having an argument with a couple of libertarians tonight, because as far as I'm concerned, this isn't like a war against liars and people who tell the truth. It's a war against psychopaths who don't even know how to tell the truth and actually believe their own lies, have no empathy and no creativity, and are willing to steal, lie, defame, and cheat at any old cost, right? Mm. How do you fight an enemy like that? Because we've got these rules called morality and humanity and things of that nature. How do you fight somebody who has no rules that they fight by? And it's a tough question. Nobody knows.
Look, you've just made a really important point, Vinny. You just characterised exactly what happened to Alan Hubbard every step of the way. Look, you know, and I spoke with that guy almost minimum once a fortnight, often every week, right? Usually for a minimum of 1 to 2 hours on the phone or in person for the whole 15 months he went through that thing. So I know every bloody stunt the government pulled against him because he used to ring me up when it happened. One of the things I learned from it, mate, was how John Key shifts the goalposts to suit him. That guy uses the law in a way that is just profoundly unfair to his victims. And that's why I have empathy or sympathy for Kim.com, for the very simple reason that, you know, all the people out there I'm watching baying and carrying on and going, oh, you know, even the people who should know better, right, were whining and carrying on about Kim.com. They had even half an idea what Alan Hubbard went through and who was 83. John Key uses reductionism more than any other person. Reductionism being reducing human beings to economic units with only a monetary value, right? It was disturbing. Alan was dehumanized to such a profound degree that I was horrified, frankly, and I remain horrified today at what I endured, what Alan endured, what we all had to endure for finding ourselves in the situation we did at that point in history. What I learned from it was how far people will go down, down, down over money. The murky, hideous, obscene depths they will stoop to for a dollar is just unbloody believable, mate. And one of the things that's really hard for me now, and one of the things that's really isolated me, is I now have to view the world from the position of knowing that. And most of my friends, even those who claim to be compassionate, caring people, have no idea of even their own capability for that kind of nastiness. And every now and again, I see a bit of it erupt here and there on Facebook, but people have no idea how vicious and nasty they will become if their supply of money is threatened. And this is the most important thing I learned from Alan Hubbard. And you know, most of my friends don't even understand the degree to which they're addicted to the stuff. It's not a criticism. I guess what I'm saying is I see an enormous amount of finger pointing going on at John Key and everybody else over money, but the most important thing I've learned from it, Vinny, is nothing will change, mate, until we all own our own self stuff around it. Hey, you're listening to The Independent Kiwi Hour. I'm Paul Carruthers, your host, and my guest, Vinny Eastwood. We're just going to take a break now. Back to Independent Kiwi Hour with Paul Carruthers. I'm your host, and I'm with Vinny Eastwood, my independent media friend in New Zealand. I think you are the one and only. You're the guy that kept it all going, mate. You deserve the audience you've got. You have worked really, really, really hard, Vinny. I'm going to give you credit absolutely where it's due. You've worked profoundly hard on behalf of your beliefs, your passions, your convictions, your faith, your truth about the world. And I know the place you come from because you've been really good to me. And I'm going to acknowledge you as a friend because you stood by me in my darkest hours when a lot of people abandoned me for defending Alan Hubbard. You allowed me to tell my story and you did it without judgment. And I just want to acknowledge you as an independent, creditable journalist with integrity. A lot of integrity in the sense that you've certainly shown willingness to put your money where your mouth is.
Well, I'd say I've probably got more honesty than integrity, but, you know, they kind of go hand in hand, I guess.
Well, mate, the thing about honesty is it's subjective, right? Opinions are like assholes. Everyone's got one. You know what I mean? But it takes guts to do what you've done. That's what I'm saying. I could have said that in a much simpler way. Just you're a strong, courageous person to keep standing up and saying, this is what I believe in. And I think you should think about these things too. And I now know how much guts it takes to do that. And I really acknowledge you for it, mate.
Guts, narcissism, potato, potato. See, the thing is, with a personality like mine, believe me, it's a lot about the self-aggrandizement, but I know what my personality flaws are, and I attempt to compensate them.
Oh, hang on. Huh? When you say personality, which one, Vinny?
Just my one, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hey, Labour, mate, let's get on to it. Labour, what the f... Tell me your version of it.
Well, see, honestly, it just seemed to me like all of the National Party signs were getting smashed and very few of the Labour ones were. So Labour didn't come out and say, hey, stop trashing our opponent's signs, did they? So it seems to me that they're just the kind of status that everybody loves, you know, the kind that are more than willing to obey the law and allow people to break it if it suits their interest. And I see the leadership kind of crumbling in there as well, because it's like Cunliffe's come in and...
Tell me straight, your opinion, straight up, David Cunliffe, do you want to give it?
He's basically the John Key of Labour. John Key lives in the Parnell Mansion, he calls the house that Merrill built, and he's apparently the MP of Helensville, which is like way across town. Likewise, Cunliffe is the MP of New Lynn, which is across town from his Herne Bay house that he lives in, which is a very swanky suburb comparable to Parnell. So I don't see a terribly large amount of difference. They both worked the majority of their life overseas. I think they're both members for Parliamentarians for Global Action, which is more or less just a globalist think tank to say, hey, we're all status and we want a world government. Isn't that great? So I see little practical difference apart from the fact that John Key's a more pathological narcissistic psychopath than Cunliffe is, hence he's way better at manipulating people into voting for him, unlike Cunliffe.
Look, I'll tell you a couple of things about the Labour Party, right? First of all, I'll tell you what I think about the election result, and I'll try and nail it as quickly as I can, okay, as succinctly. Do I think it was rigged? First question, because that seems to be on a few people's minds. I think the campaign, in the context that was the campaign to dissuade people from voting, very successful, yes. I think the strategy worked really well. And I think what we talked about before in the earlier segment about being able to become the victim instead of being the perpetrator who basically gets to claim victim status in the end when their victim turns on them. And they just got to play that out beautifully. It was like a symphony that just they sailed through that with the help of the media. I think David Cunliffe made a massive tactical error. David Cunliffe's biggest problem is David Cunliffe. David Cunliffe's biggest problem is his ego. He did not think of the Labour Party. He thought of the Labour Party, but only in terms of himself. The biggest tactical error he made was to run a first-past-the-post election in that bloody environment. It was just stupid. He threw that election, there's no doubt about it, and he made it clear today to me in the media, he didn't give a toss, mate. I reckon David Cunliffe's already decided it's too hard and he can earn more money elsewhere anyway. And I wouldn't be at all surprised, and I'll tell you the reason why in a minute. I met David Cunliffe at Albert McCurry's house, who Alan Hubbard's close personal friend and doctor. And I met David Cunliffe, can't remember what date. It was certainly between 2010 and 2011. He was there to try and get information that he could use against the National Party and government. Right? I met him briefly on his way out the door, spoke to him for a few minutes, and he seemed to have some idea of who I was, in the sense that I'd probably earned a sort of a very minor reputation amongst MPs because I've been sending lots of letters and emails and shit like that. He very immediately was quite warm and sincere, and I was rather impressed and thought, oh, wow, what a lovely man. And of course, I'd gone and got Alan Hubbard's investors on an email distribution list because I held public meetings to obtain the information so that I could communicate with them on his behalf. I didn't set myself up like that. It's just that after I got to know him, it just became something that became more and more obvious to do.
Speaking of which, you saw an article recently come out of the Herald sort of exonerating Alan, or the money got back to his investors or something?
It was announced yesterday that 99.37% of all of the original investors' money is going to be returned to them now after 4 years of statutory management. Now, how they've quite done that, I don't know. They must have taken fees out of the sale of assets that were sold to realise those investments, because they took something like $20 million in fees over 4 years, and yet the original investment was $101 million, and they're getting $100 million back. I'm going to tell you this, I'll say this publicly. I sent Bernard Hickey an email. First line in the email was Ponzi scheme, Bernie, because that was how he described Alan Hubbard's businesses right back at the beginning. And he published an article that said 10 reasons why Alan Hubbard should apologise to New Zealand. So I just said, I can see an article coming, Bernie says 10 reasons why Bernie should apologise to New Zealand. I said, how would you describe this as a point? I said, mate, and I felt like saying it, but I didn't say it in a thing. But my intent was, thanks, Bernie. You completely destroyed a man's life. You absolutely destroyed his reputation with your publishing power. Gave him no chance. It's like rape. You know, if you yell fraud and you can't prove it, it's too late anyway. Because something like 30% of the people out there will just believe the accuser. I mean, let me tell you something, Vinny. I was born in Yemen, in Aden, Yemen, in 1964 on the 30th of September. It's my birthday on Tuesday. I'll be 50 years old. And my mother is from London. My father is from Scotland. My mother was escorted to the hospital by British soldiers because I came along in a curfew late at night. And because of that, my birth certificate now is Aden Yemen. The current environment just has me, the occasional thought enters my head, mate, where I think someone like John Key could just point the finger at me and go, terrorist. And 30% of the people out there would actually believe him without needing any evidence. And that scares the bloody shit out of me, mate.
Yeah, the problem is they could say anything. They could say anything and they believe
it. That's the thing. If I want to get through to anyone in my audience, if you ever listen to me again, please listen to this. Just listen. This is the most important thing I've been trying to tell you for 4 years. Okay, the ease with which the media can criminalize a member of the public on behalf of a politician, it is so quick and easy that it can happen today in this flash of an eye, that lives can be destroyed in one sentence. And it is happening more and more and more. And I even see friends of mine who claim to be compassionate people getting whipped up into frenzies and getting all hatey-hatey about certain groups in society because of what they're being told by an external source, and they're not thinking it through for themselves. There's just more and more and more of it going on, Bernie. You know, the environment is heating up around security issues and economic issues, and people are just getting more and more freaked out and hyped up, and this has never been a more important time in history. Take a deep breath and everyone just calm the fuck down, mate. That's how I see things.
Somebody asked me, like, what's the next step for you, Vinny? And I say, well, same as always, one foot in front of the other. You think an election changes something? I mean, how many of our laws got changed instantly because of the none? Oh, okay. Is the country going in a radically different direction other than straight down and the debt straight up as a result of the election? No, is that changed? No. Okay, are we jumping out of any of our international agreements and things like that with banking syndicates and the UN and any number of international faceless organizations that most people aren't even aware of? Is any of that changing? Because no? Okay, then it's inconsequential. Your life doesn't change just because your government does it? And I think this is why people think that they can just go, you know, bugger it. I'm not gonna vote. There's no freaking point. Because ultimately, they don't see a point in actually trying to voice any kind of dissent towards a system that obviously can't be overthrown by simply having your voice heard. It doesn't work that way. I've never seen any country become like totally independent and out of the hands of the bankers and the scoundrels and the psychopathic, narcissistic, scumbaggery filth that really occupy any annal of hierarchical power structure in your country. I've never seen any country be given all of that praise, all of that beauty, and all of that freedom because they just said that they wanted it. You have to actually fight for it, and not just like once in a while. You kind of have to fight for it every day until you get it.
the Icelandic revolution happened very simply because it's very simple. They stood outside the parliament for about 3 weeks, literally, and did it in shifts. So there were several thousand people there at the time with pots and pans, and they just banged them with utensils. Bum, 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 bum. They did it for 3 weeks solid outside of parliament until the entire parliament resigned and said, fuck, we can't take this. And that's exactly and that's what happened in Iceland. It was a peaceful revolution. That's just what needs to happen here for a start. And that's how what people need to figure out. They all just need to calm down and develop a different strategy and just realise that there is a way to stop these people. And if you really want to change the world, vote with your money. Don't be stupid. Don't sit there and complain about the Iraq bloody war and keep turning up to petrol pumps and trying to fill up your V6 and your V8. You're just being a wanker, because every time you do it, you're buying a shareholding in it. Put your money where your mouth is. If you're going to talk about it at all, either enjoy it, enjoy your V6 or your V8, or put your money where your mouth is. Don't blame politicians for sitting in the middle and clipping the ticket like they do, and you damn well know they do it, because the first thing you complain about is, oh, you know, they're all working for bloody corporations, not us, they're representing corporations, not us. Well, guess what? Use your brains. Starve the corporations. Bring the politicians to their knees. Think it through. Figure out where your priorities are and change the way you spend your money around it. It's not rocket science. I'll give you an example, mate. If you want a stronger sense of community, for instance, invest your money in things that create a stronger sense of community. If you want not wars for oil, reduce your dependency on petroleum products. Starve for oil companies of money. Bring them to their knees. This is why Israel gave up very quickly, because they lost $16 billion in about 10 seconds flat. Because everybody just went, oh, fuck that, we're going to stop buying anything from Israel. I did. I went out of my way not to buy anything from Israel. And guess what? So did most other people. Guess what? Israel ran out of money real quick, had a basic economic crisis, and went, okay, Palestine, right, we'll still be pricks, but we'll pretend to talk to you.
We vote for our politicians once every 3 years, but we vote for the corporations every single day with our wallets. So that's basically, at the end of the day, the money stream for these people, isn't it?
Exactly. And because we won't change our habits, this goes on, and we sit back at night and eat popcorn watching them argue about it. And it's,
what is this weakness, Paul? What is this freaking weakness with people?
It's a lack of appreciation for life, Vinny. It's a lack of appreciation for the opportunity to breathe, for Christ's sake, and the gift of life that your parents gave you. You probably evolved beyond them a long time ago, but hey, guess what? They still gave you the gift of life. And how much appreciation have you got for, I'm not criticizing anybody, mate, I'm not judging anybody. I'm a person on my own path to developing my own appreciation of life, and I'm far from it yet, because I have all sorts of dark and negative thoughts every day, and I'm down, and it's all too hard, and oh God. But at the end of the day, mate, I just sound frightening like John Key. Oh, stop me, Vinny.
I can't stop you, it's funny.
Too many people looking down, too many people looking at their feet. People have to develop a greater appreciation for life and the sense of urgency around balancing whatever we're doing with our environment. We have to do that. We've got to stop pretending that we don't have to do that. That's how I see it.
I see it that people haven't suffered enough. Basically, if you appreciate your freedoms and you appreciate the things that you got, and you didn't actually have to suffer any iota in order to get those freedoms that you love so much and those entertainments that you enjoy, then you won't fight when they're taken away from you, because you didn't think that you had to earn them.
I'm lucky. I was brought up in the Middle East and the Pacific Islands. I spent 5 years in Papua New Guinea, 3 years in Vanuatu. I grew up in really indigenous cultures. I saw the effects of colonialism. I led a fantastic life. And I didn't see a television set till I was 13. So I developed imagination. And I see the world in very different ways than most New Zealanders, which is what has put me at odds with a lot of people over Alan Hubbard. A lot of people misunderstood my motives for helping the man. For me, he was just an old man first and foremost. I don't view life in monetary terms, which is sometimes to my detriment. New Zealand is a heavily monetized environment in terms of everything is valued in terms of it, including people. It's scary. It's just a really cold place sometimes. When you live in the Pacific cultures, they're very warm cultures, largely. I mean, there's a lot of focus on brutality in terms of from the way the West perspective of it, but I only ever experienced warmth in the Pacific cultures, even in Papua New Guinea. It was fantastic. I'd only learned about how brutal it could be probably after I left it, when I sort of started reading reports about it in New Zealand. Every 5 years or so, there'd be something about some brutality in Papua New Guinea, but I never experienced it myself. I only ever experienced humour and warmth and vibrant liveness and just a seething mass of indigenousness of all types. It was so vibrant, it was unreal. And I've never lost that perspective. All I see in every person around me is all I care about is demeanour. Well, I'm interested in his demeanour. What is your demeanour? What is your intent? What is your attitude? Physicality of a person registers, but it's the way they're holding themselves and their intent and their attitude towards other people, which is visible. It's visible in all people. We all know it. We lie to ourselves about it, but ultimately, when we look back on our relationships with people, we always knew where they were coming from. We usually know that right from the first instant. I've always held on to the ability to register that very quickly with pretty much anyone. I'm just a very hard person to lie to. My biggest mistake in New Zealand has always been that I relay the information back as to what I'm seeing, and I've learned not to do that. That's not good for me in New Zealand, mate.
In any kind of system where you have people in charge of your editors, especially, you do great in the media, Paul.
Well, in Indigenous cultures, it's actually being helpful. You just go, what's wrong? You know, in New Zealand, it's just so confrontational. It's like you want to help people. It doesn't come from a place of putting people down. It comes from a place of trying to help them, but it comes across as critical sometimes.
I think maybe that's part of the fact that everybody's now living vicariously through their favourite TV characters, and they have no freaking idea who the fuck they are anymore. And so when
Yeah, you're right.
Whenever you criticise anything that has nothing to do with them, they think they're talking about them because they've become so freaking narcissistic by proxy that they just can't think about anything else.
Yeah, a lot of people I know are trying to be someone. I don't think I am trying to be anyone. I'm just being myself. But I don't like other people attributing their motives for doing something upon me without actually asking me why I did it. Best way to put it. Does that make sense?
I do. And in fact, that reminds me of something that was said in the Moment of Truth about John Key and all his supporters saying, oh, these reporters must be henchmen that he's brought over. They must be doing it for the money. What this reporter said is that they actually have exposed something about themselves there because they can't ever picture anybody doing anything for something other than money. And so they project it onto other people.
That's exactly right. John Key does it so well. You're dead right. You're absolutely right. David Cunliffe doesn't do it too. What the bloody hell does David Cunliffe do, Vinny, other than smile and nod a lot? Remember when you were a kid, did you ever see those sort of like plastic dogs they'd put on the rear parcel shelf of a car and they always had heads that nodded when the car braked and all the rest of it?
Yeah, they brought out a Barack Obama version and its head goes from side to side to its teleprompters.
Oh, no, they didn't.
No, they didn't. We just made it up on the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. It's freaking hilarious.
Oh, good on you, mate.
It was the Barack Obobble.
The Barack Obobble.
Made in Kenya.
Okay, cool. I tell you, I was going to tell you something before about the Labour Party and we never got around to it. And I've got to bring this up. I approached Jacinda Ardern at the Waiheke Markets week or so before the election, and I said to her, what are you guys going to do about South Canterbury Finance? And she looked at me all puzzled, and I said, well, you know the way they treated Alan Hubbard was unlawful. And I said, if that gets uncovered, that's your way into an inquiry. And she just went, oh, no, I think the SFO investigation was perfectly robust. And I'm like, oh, even though they gave copies of his biography away at the SFO Christmas party as booby prizes while he was still under investigation, and they never even interviewed him, you'd call that robust, would you? And she just couldn't get away from me fast enough, right? That's the first observation. The second observation is, as we talked about, David Cunliffe. David Cunliffe rang me back the next day because I told Alan Hubbard's investors he'd gone there to get information to basically reveal in Parliament what was going on. He rang me back the next day because I told Alan Hubbard's investors and tore strips off me for declaring that he'd been there because of the possibility that the National Party would use it against him. And now that told me straight away what David Cunliffe's motives are. And I thought, right, that's it, David, we're done. See ya. And I won't support him since. Now, I've had half my friends on Facebook have cut me off for declaring my refusal to support the man. And I've had a lot of people unfriend me because of that. I'm gracious in victory, mate. I won't contact them or say a word, but I'm just like, well, you know, you silly people. You should have listened. When someone talks from direct experience, like Edward Snowden, for instance, someone who was there, who saw it with his own eyes and says, da, 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 and you allow a third party to shut that down without giving you one shred of evidence to prove that it's wrong, just their word for it, you're silly. Don't fall for it. Same as I've been saying all the way through this thing. Accusations and headlines are not proof. They are not proof. A lot of my friends keep falling for this. Don't fall for it. Accusations and headlines are not proof of anything other than accusations and headlines. Well, that's the independent Kiwi hour. I'm your host, Paul Carruthers. It's been great talking to you, Vinny.
Great talking to you too. And ladies and gentlemen, check out my website, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And if you want to help me help all the activists and all of that kind of stuff around this country who the freaking media ignore because they're a bunch of airhead pieces of trash who get funding from Coca-Cola and banks, pay all their bills, I need the people to pay mine. And unfortunately, it means I can only usually afford maybe $5 a week. You know, maybe it's taxation, maybe it's carbon tax, maybe it's just GMOs and whatnot. Who knows what it is? But if you just give a little, you can get quite a lot back.
Good. Help Vinny tell you the truth.